Wir sind Theresa und
Nemo.
Und deshalb sind wir zu Shopify gewechselt.
Die Plattform, die wir vor Shopify verwendet haben, hat regelmäßig Updates gebraucht, die teilweise dazu geführt haben, dass der Shop nicht funktioniert hat.
Endlich macht unser Nemo-Boards-Shop dadurch auch auf den Mobilgeräten eine gute Figur. Und die Illustrationen auf den Boards kommen jetzt viel, viel klarer rüber, was uns ja auch wichtig ist und was unsere Marke auch ausmacht.
Starte deinen Test noch heute für 1 Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/radio.
When my wife of 17 years decided to leave me for some guy she met online, moved to some nowhere town in Tennessee to be with him, and laughingly threw divorce papers in my face when she left, I thought my life was over. Now, during the divorce hearings, which my wife, or ex-wife, had to drive from Tennessee to attend, the topic of alimony came up. At that time, I only made a little over $1,200 a month, after taxes, as a janitor and baggage handler at the local airport in town. It was a very small airport. There was just me and another guy, as well as the owner that worked there at the time. Actually, it was categorized by the FAA, you know, the Federal Aviation Administration, as a basic airport. We just called it local. Anyway, we housed small propeller planes like crop dusters, personal use planes, things like that. The terminal was actually a double-wide trailer. Well, a modular home, if you want to be politically correct. Which I don't. I haven't been politically correct my whole life, so I'm not about to start now. Anyway, it was a three-bedroom trailer. One room was Mr. Reynolds' office. The second room was for storage. The third room, well, it didn't have a purpose. It was completely empty. The waiting area was what would have been the living room. The kitchen was a little snack and drink station. And of course, there was the bathroom. Now, back to the divorce hearings. Wouldn't you know, my wife, or ex-wife, was kind enough to take half of that $1,200 for alimony, claiming she was single and unable to work to support herself due to severe IBS. You know, irritable bowel syndrome. She was lying, but the judge believed her anyway. The court system in this country is screwed up. Now, after the divorce was finalized, I had to move out of the house we were renting, simply because, without having another income coming in, I couldn't afford it anymore. The rent alone was $850. That was more than I even brought home a month after the alimony payment. I left almost everything behind. Most of it was hers anyway, and I sure as hell didn't want it. Anyway, I packed an old duffel bag with my work uniforms, a couple pairs of socks and underwear, some t-shirts, and a couple pairs of jeans, as well as my phone charger, my toothbrush, toothpaste, razor and shaving cream. I put all my CDs, my DVDs and the DVD player in a large Scotts paper towel box that I got from a creepy old grocery store in town. I then threw the duffel bag in the trunk and gently placed the box in the front seat of my car. After I moved out, I slept in the car for about a week or so, in the parking lot of the airport, and took an Amish bath in the bathroom every morning. Don't judge. The morning after last night, I slept in my car, which was a Friday morning. I was mopping the floor in the waiting area, when the owner of the airport, Mr. Reynolds, came up to me. Mr. Reynolds is an older gentleman, mid to late 60s, married with 3 grown children and a really nice guy. He's the reason I stayed working here. Anyway, he came up to me and said, "Hey, Richie." That's my name, Richie. Well, Ernest Richundo, really. But I don't like people calling me Ernest. It reminds me of all those Hey Vern commercials back in the 80s. You know, that Jim Varney character, Ernest P. Worrell. I forget the company they were for. Anyway, I love the Ernest movies, though. Ernest Goes to Camp, Ernest Scared Straight, Slam Dunk Ernest, just to name a few. They're hilarious. I have them all on DVD. Now, like I was saying, the owner walked up to me and said, "Hey Richie, I know it's none of my business. I'm just worried about you, son. But were you sleeping in your car this morning when I came in?" I was a little embarrassed to answer, but I finally did. "Yes, sir," I said, and hung my head, feeling small. He just stood there. "It's a long story, sir," I said, still hanging my head. "Come back to my office, Richie. Let's talk about it," if you don't mind. This floor can wait, he said. I told you, he was a nice guy. Anyway, I put the mop in the bucket, pushed it over into the corner, then followed him back to his office. He opened the door, walked in and said, Have a seat, Richie. So, I did. That was the first time that I had ever been in his office. It was your normal, outdated office. There was a huge, grey metal desk in the middle of the room, with My Little Pony stickers in front of it. I don't want to know why those were there. On top of the desk sat an old Radio Shack TRS-80 computer on the front right corner, a framed picture of his wife next to it, a desktop calendar in the middle, a coffee cup with pens in it, and a Microcom radio. At least that's what I call it. I'm sure there's a real name for it. I just don't know what it is. It's basically a high-frequency radio used to communicate between planes and the terminal. Anyway, they both sat on the left side of his desk. There were three filing cabinets in the right corner of the room, with a coffee pot in the top right first one, a file sorter full of files on top of the second one, and a small oscillating fan on the top of the third, tan carpet on the floor, wood paneling on the walls, and a white hard foam ceiling like you would find in any mobile home. A large fake plastic plant sat in the left corner of the room, with 8x10 pictures of vintage airplanes on the walls surrounding it, as well as a large picture window directly behind the desk, giving a clear view of the only runway. Anyway, he sat down in his big brown leather chair, cupped his hands together, leaned forward on his desk and said, I can see you're upset, and I don't mean to pry, but what's going on? I took a deep breath, let it out and replied, Well, sir, my wife left me, took half my check for alimony. I can't afford the place anymore, so I've been sleeping in my car, sir. He just looked at me with an oh my god look on his face. He then sat back in his chair. Richie, he said, how long have you been working here? Over 15 years, sir, I replied. 15 years? That's a long time, even longer than I've been here. You never complain about anything. You never call out, and you do everything I ask. In my book, that grants you a little privilege, he said. Privilege, sir? I questioned. No, it's not much, but it's better than your car, he said. There's an old tool shed out back that the groundskeepers used to use. It's a pretty good-sized shed. It's got electric and a linoleum floor. There may be some old tools in there. I think there's a folding cot out there as well. If not, I'll find you one. Why would there be a folding cot in the tool shed? I thought. It's all yours for as long as you need it. A week, a month, a year, 10 years even. If you want it, that is, he finished saying. Oh, yes, sir. Thank you. I really appreciate it. That back seat is killing my back, I replied excitedly. Come on, I'll show you where it is, he said, standing up and motioning for me to come with him. As I got up, the Microcom began to make a loud, sharp, staticky sound a few times, then stopped. It scared the hell out of me. I jumped. It does that sometimes, Mr. Reynolds said dismissively. Come on. I just stared at the Microcom with a what the hell look on my face. After a few seconds, I snapped back to reality. With all my years of working here, I've never seen a tool shed out back, I thought. We walked out of the office, out the back door, down the steps and toward the runway. After about 10 minutes of walking, I saw it. Now, when you think of the words tool and shed, you think of a small little 4-foot by 7-foot structure, right? Well, this thing was almost as big as the terminal. It was 8 feet in width and 17 feet in length. And yes, I measured it. It was huge, as far as tool sheds go, that is. It had wood paneling all the way around it. Not that mobile home paneling, like what was in Mr. Reynolds' office. No, that unfinished wood paneling like you get at Lowe's. Someone had painted it white, and trimmed it with 1x4s painted black. The doors were the same way. It was sharp looking. There were 2 small windows, with sliding panels so you could open them, on either side of the door, which were directly in the middle of the front of it, and open outward to either side. there were two more windows, one on each side of the shed and two more in the back. And get this, it actually had a real roof. It was a peaked roof with real roof shingles like you would see on an actual house. Now, I had actually seen that thing before, but I didn't think it was a tool shed. I thought it was one of those little houses you see on TV, and that someone was actually living in it. It was that nice. "Here you go, Richie. It's all yours," Mr. Reynolds said, patting me on the back. "Go ahead, check it out." I opened the doors to see that the interior of the shed was completely drywalled and even painted white, even the ceiling, with several electric sockets on the bottom of each wall. There was an old rusty saw, an 8-foot ladder, and a few sawhorses in the far back right corner. And yes, there was a small folding cot, leaned up against the wall in the front left corner. "Oh my god," I said, completely amazed. "It's like a little studio apartment. How much do you want for it, sir?" I asked. "Not a thing," he said. "Like I said, it's all yours, and take the rest of the day and the weekend off, with pay of course. You've had a rough time lately. Get some rest, and I'll see you on Monday." Really, really nice guy. "Oh, thank you, sir. I've got a little more money on me. I'm going to run down to Wally World and get some sheets and a pillow, sir. Thanks again," I said, excitedly. "I'll walk back with you," he said, as he turned around and began to walk towards the terminal. I followed closely behind. We said our goodbyes as he walked in the terminal, and I continued to the parking lot. I got in my car and went to Wally World, got some twin sheets, a pillow, and a pillowcase, like I said, and then made an unplanned stop at my old house. Technically, the month wasn't over yet, and I was paid up until the 1st, so legally, it was still my house. Anyway, I walked in, grabbed the TV, the coffee pot, and all the fixings, a few gallons of spring water, the microwave, some food, the mini fridge we kept in my bedroom, my dresser, a blanket, and a little blue table that sat in the hallway. It was my ex-wife's, but screw it, I needed a table, as well as that dolly that was in the laundry room that I used to move my dresser. How did I fit all of that in my car, you ask? Well, my car was actually a 98 Chevy Blazer, that's how. Anyway, I got back to the airport, unloaded my car, and put it all in my new place, including my box of DVDs and stuff. Now, pulling the dolly across the grass while walking backwards and trying not to drop the dresser was fun. That's a joke, by the way. I arranged everything the way I wanted it. I unfolded the cot, I put the sheets on it and the pillowcase, hooked the DVD player up to the TV, laid on the cot, and watched the Marathon of Ernest movies, thinking, I have everything I need right here in this shed. Well, except for a bathroom. But luckily, there was one of those porta-potty things close by. I don't know why it was there, but I was sure glad it was, especially in the mornings. Wow, I've babbled on for too long. Let me get down to the story. Now, I laid around all weekend, watching movies, old TV shows I recorded, drinking coffee, and eating on occasion. I called Mr. Reynolds on Saturday to get my schedule, and he had me on all 5 nights, Monday through Friday. I didn't really care though. The night shift is easy. There's no one else there. You gotta clean up, turn on the runway lights, and listen for pilots to call in and assist them if needed. Easy, right? You see, I don't care when I work, just as long as I work. Now, I walked to the terminal Monday afternoon, a little before 3 o'clock, punched in and went to work, said hi and bye to the other guy. I think his name is Dave or something. Got my instructions for the night from Mr. Reynolds and said bye to him as well. You see, the terminal is closed between 11 p.m. and 7 a.m. If you fly out or in during those times, you're on your own. Anyway, the night was going good. I turned on the runway lights about 7 o'clock. No planes had come in, and none had flew out. I was cleaning up Mr. Reynolds' office per his request. When it happened, it was about 9:30 at the time. The overhead light in the office dimmed just a little, then came back to normal. Power surge, I thought, and just blew it off. Seconds later, the microcom began to make another loud, sharp, staticky sound. This time, it didn't stop. No, it continued. I walked over to the desk and just stared at it. What the hell? I said to myself. I then began to hear very low screams coming from within the static. Not over the static, in the static. I'd never heard anything like that before. It was quite unnerving. The volumes of the screams grew louder with each passing second, until they were almost at a fever pitch. I covered my ears and screamed stop as loud as I could. Then, it just stopped. I removed my hands from my ears. Dead silence. What the hell just happened? I thought, starting to get concerned. Okay, it's a glitch. It's old equipment. Maybe there's a crossed wire somewhere, I said to myself, trying to rationalize what just happened. I took a deep breath, let it out, and continued cleaning the office, still a little freaked out. I began singing to myself to try and calm my nerves. I forget what song I was singing. Well, it doesn't really matter. I was really getting into it when the microcom started up again. It was a loud popping sound. Then the overhead light began to flicker like a strobe light on steroids. Mayday, mayday, mayday. I'm declaring an emergency. Clear your runway now. I'm coming in. A very intense male voice said from the microcom. I quickly looked out the window to see nothing but runway lights. No planes in approach and none on the runway. What the hell? I thought. The overhead light went out. The runway lights went out as well. I was standing there in complete darkness. I screamed, pulled my phone out of my pocket, turned on the flashlight, and quickly made my way to the door. Completely scared out of my mind. I was just about to grab the knob when I turned back for some reason, just as this incredibly bright white light filled the entire room. I threw myself back against the door, closed my eyes, covering them with both my hands, and falling down into a sitting position. Now, we've all had bright light shined in our eyes a few times in our lives, right? We cover our eyes and can always tell when the light was gone, even with your eyes completely covered, right? Well, I sat there with my eyes completely covered for a good 2 minutes. Then, the light was gone. I uncovered my eyes and opened them. The overhead light was back on in the office. Now, what I saw standing there behind the desk was unlike anything I'd ever seen before. It was what I could only describe as not of this planet. It had pale, grey skin. It was tall, extremely tall, so tall that it had to lean over so it could fit in the 8-foot-high room. It was completely bald, with two big, bulging, jet-black eyes that did not blink. There were two small holes where a nose should have been, with no mouth and no ears. Its neck was about 2 feet long, with some kind of knob or button on the right side of it. It was extremely skinny, with legs about 6 feet long, and arms about 6 feet long as well. It had elongated fingers, and I couldn't see its toes, they were behind the desk. It had what looked to be two small speakers side by side in the middle of its chest, with a red indicator light under the speaker on the left, and a green indicator light under the speaker on the right. I was completely, absolutely, and utterly horrified. I screamed repeatedly, fearing for my life. Please don't kill me. Please don't kill me, I screamed. That thing then tilted its head to the side and began to speak as the red light began to flash. Now, the language that it spoke sounded like a cat coughing up a hairball. I stopped screaming and listened to it. A sense of calmness fell over me as I rose to my feet and stood there, staring at this thing as it stared back at me, still speaking. It stopped speaking and just stared at me. I can't understand you, I said calmly. It then reached up with its right hand and pressed the button on its neck. Another staticky sound came from its chest. Then it began to speak. This time, I understood every word. Greetings, Earthling. My name is... something I couldn't understand. I am the ruler of the planet Zemphar. I come in peace. I wish you no harm. But make no mistake, I will kill you if I have to, it said. What do you want? I asked. I and the beings of my planet seek refuge here on planet Earth. Refuge from what? Now, never in my life did I ever imagine that I would be having an intelligent conversation with an extraterrestrial being. But it was happening. From annihilation, my planet has become under attack by those seeking to take the only resource my planet has. Water. So, you all want to come here? Nearly 75% of planet Earth is covered in water, and since I and the beings of my planet are made up of water, we will most certainly survive here. So, you're going to kill everyone on this planet and take it over? That is not our intention. We are civilized beings that intend to live among the people of your planet. How? We are far more advanced than any human here on Earth. We possess the power to alter our appearance. We can make ourselves look just like you Earthlings. As I stood there, I watched, whatever its name was, shift into what I can only describe as a human man, fully dressed and wearing glasses. He even waved at me. How the hell, I began to say, as it shifted back. Cool, I stated. If you will allow myself and the beings of my planet to come to Earth, using this portal, and live amongst you humans, saving the entire population of my planet, I will grant you the ability to achieve all your desires, however big or small they may be. I thought about it for a while, then said, Hell yeah, I'll do it. But you can only come at night. No one will see you then. Agreed, he replied. He then extended his right arm, extending his finger as well, and slowly moved it towards me. I thought we had a deal, I screamed as his finger touched my chest, and then withdrew. I stood there, trembling uncontrollably. Make a wish, it said. I slowly stopped trembling and said, I want a cup of coffee. I blinked my eyes, and when I opened them again, there was a cup of fresh-brewed hot coffee with cream and sugar sitting in an all-white coffee cup on the edge of Mr. Reynolds' desk. I was completely ecstatic. I picked it up and took a drink. It was the best-tasting coffee I'd ever had. Satisfied, it said. Mm-hmm, I replied. Whatever its name was then shifted back into the man, and looked out the office window. I went and stood beside him. As I looked out the window, I saw that the runway lights were back on. I also saw hundreds, if not thousands, of people walking down the runway and heading toward the terminal. There were men, women, teenagers, and young children, as well as older men and women, all dressed differently and from different ethnic backgrounds. Are they all from your planet? I asked. They most certainly are. They have all adapted physical traits that will help them blend in amongst the people of your planet. Thank you, my friend, he said sincerely, putting his left hand on my left shoulder and extending his right hand toward me. I then shook hands with him. This is merely a fraction of the beings on my planet. It will take several months, even years, human time that is, for all of them to arrive. I trust you will be here to assist them with that. I certainly will, I replied. All the people then walked past the window, some waving, some not, and then they just disappeared. Where did they go to? I asked. To different parts of your planet, he replied. Thank you again, my friend. And then he disappeared himself. I just stood there. What the actual hell just happened? I thought. I then looked at the coffee cup on my desk and smiled. I finished my shift, locked up, and went back to my shed. I had the best night's sleep I had in a long time. I got up the next morning, and just for a laugh, I wished for a 1957 Chevy. I walked out to the parking lot, and there it was, right where my Blazer was parked. Now, to make an incredibly long story short, I went to work that night, didn't say anything to Mr. Reynolds or to Dave, and the same thing happened that night, at the same time. Well, except the Mayday call. I don't know what that was about. Anyway, it happened again on Wednesday night, and then Thursday night. Friday morning, I went to Mr. Reynolds and asked him to put me in the night shift 7 days a week, for straight pay, of course. He was a little confused, but he agreed. He cut my hours from 3 till 11 to 5:30 till 11. I was fine with that. As time went on, I used my new gift to get a few things for myself and to help a few people out. Since Mr. Reynolds was so nice to me, I figured it was about time he retired and spent his remaining years with his wife and family. I wished for $1 million in a brown duffel bag, got it, carried it to his office, and made him a deal he couldn't refuse. $1 million cash to Selma the airport. He didn't even hesitate or even question where I got the money from. He just opened the top left drawer of his desk, pulled out the deed, signed it, grabbed the bag, and left. He sends me a family photo postcard from different parts of the globe every now and then. I hope he's happy. The new arrivals come every single night now, and have been for quite some time. I shut down the airport, as a business that is, so I can focus on helping my new friends. I gave Dave $100,000 when I did, and wished him the best. Come to find out, his real name is Earl. I always thought it was Dave. Anyway, I moved out of the shed and into the terminal. Well, what was the terminal? I fully furnished it by using my gift. I put a few more sheds out back, 17 to be exact. I had them built just like the first one. I used them for any of the arrivals that want to stay in town. It looks like a little housing development out there. Now, I don't know how many people I've let come to this planet. Thousands. Maybe tens of thousands. And they all look like us. Maybe your new co-worker is one of them. Maybe the old lady standing behind you at the grocery store. Maybe the guy or girl you took home from the bar last night. Who knows? I can't tell. Now, remember when I said that I thought my life was over when my ex-wife left me? I was wrong. My wife now has purpose. Helping others. Oh yeah, speaking of my ex-wife, she called me a couple days ago. She said that the guy she had left me for left her for some 20-year-old blonde bimbo, and that she was recently diagnosed with severe irritable bowel syndrome. For real this time. Then she started crying and asked if she could come home. I hung up on her. What? I had nothing to do with it. I swear.